But we definitely want all of y'all to be involved in this, so feel free to throw in whatever questions you have. We want y'all to help each other because we know that y'all are all at the stage of, I'm thinking about doing this. What kinds of things do I still have left to do? What are other areas that might be doing the same thing? And so we want y'all to be involved in this discussion. All of us who have done some presentation are more than willing to answer any specific questions that you have, but this is y'all's opportunity to ask each other questions. I've got about 5 or 6 questions that have been given to me as well as posted on the discussion piece. At any time, please feel free to jump in and answer some of these. If you're thinking about something already and already know, please do so. I've just got something to kind of keep us stimulated for the next 50 minutes. I'm sure we'll probably all still have a million things to talk about, even if this only lasts about 5 minutes or if it lasts the entire time. And we'll definitely try to get any information up that you want on those links so you have something to access via the sessions or the conference software. If any of y'all would like to start off with any questions, I'd be more than willing to let y'all do that. Like I said, I'm just going to help keep this moving, but if not, I have a couple of questions to start that off with. So feel free to jump in and start if you have some questions. Go ahead.
Do you have power stations around campus where students can just maybe lock up their iPhones or iTouches to just run out of power? I can't help but notice after being using mine all day today, I'm already out. So.
No, we do not, but there are plans. We just got some quotes from our hardware guy not too long ago to have a solar-powered charging station installed in the library to kind of keep the green idea going. And so it would be like a big lockup station where you could come to the Learning Commons, plug your phone in, go get some coffee for a little while, and then come back, and it would be a totally green charging station. So we are thinking about that, especially as these devices are starting to get older. You're going to see a lot less battery life. I mean, I do now, and I try as hard as I can to cycle that power and treat it the best, but the students don't think about that a lot. So we are getting to that point, but we, as of now, do not have specific locations for that. I will make one note. Apple brought a huge 40-set charging station. If you want to go back to registration, it's probably still there. They've been charging stuff for people. That was a really cool device. This is the first time I've ever gotten the opportunity to see one, and it wheels around and stuff like that. So there are options out there for stuff like that. You just have to find it and be able to secure it down and give the users the opportunity to use it without other people stealing their device.
Let me say one thing. Please don't go away to say that ACU is about to build solar charging. we are very interested in that idea. Our hardware technician is very creative, and we have told him to go forth and figure this out, but very much in the idea stages, and we have not done that yet. So we'd like to. We think it'd be cool, but I don't know what the real extent is. So just, yeah, I don't want our boss to hear that.
Be on the front page of the Times.
Yeah. It's all a thought right now.
Fair enough. Guess I won't ask who the vendor is.
No idea. Any other questions y'all would like to kind of continue with?
I actually have quite a few, but I'll intersperse. A lot of them have actually been answered throughout. And there's some I probably was mistyping and didn't send the list like I should have. So forgive me if I cover some of them again. But one of the things is I know in order to update the iPhone, you plug it in. Large scale, that's got to be kind of an issue. How do you guys deal with it?
Most of the software that we deploy out to our students right now is web-based. And so when Apple comes out with a new release that's major, it could become an issue. As of now, it's not something we've had to deal with because all of the software that we've had works with 2.0 or higher. Now, at the very beginning of our distribution, that was a big issue because all of the touches came with the 1.0 software, and we upgraded all of them manually before we gave them to the students. So that was a big concern. It will be. I'm sure there'll have to be a huge communication plan put in place when we have to face it. But if you're developing web applications, you're less likely to run into issues like that. The nice thing is with the App Store, though, Once you install an application, the App Store constantly keeps up to date with newer versions that are coming out, so you're not having to run back to your computer and sync to your device. So there are solutions out there for it. It's just how you communicate to the users on how to do it.
I was meaning specifically the firmware updates.
Oh, man.
Do you see blips in the network traffic? I'm wondering if, you know, that happens when the students go back to their dorm room, for example, and you know, plug into iTunes. Is there, do you see a spike that, okay, after classes are all out on the day that's released, that, you know, 5 o'clock or whatever it is, it zips up, or that's not been a...
No, because we have a caching server on campus. When someone downloads file X, it's still on campus, and so we're not going back to Apple to download that again. It saves us internally. So that's not as big of a concern when the caching server is down. Yeah, it definitely is, but we generally don't see students running back to just go update their devices. They're not that happy-go-lucky about them. I'm sure there are a couple, but not mass amounts. They're rather going to go home and get on Facebook or hang out with their friends is more so what we're going to see, kind of dispersed. If you think about it, how we get our wireless network connected as they're going through, they do it at all times of the day. They don't just, you know, as soon as they're here, some of them plug it in, some wait 2 or 3 days. And so I think all of them deal with technology when they're comfortable with it. There's not any specific times they're running back to do that kind of stuff.
We have seen a 20% increase in network internet access needs over last year, but that's no different than it was 20% more the year before that, too. So it's been predictable, even though we've added all these devices.
That's interesting.
We have a 100 meg system. We're planning to go to 155 next fall, just as a matter of updates.
There's a question back here.
Yeah, well, I actually just want to go off what you just said. You said you're using a caching server. Is that going through like software update server, or is that something different that Apple set up for y'all's program that you did? Does that make sense?
It's just our network cache server, so all the network traffic runs through that cache flow server, and so anything that's downloaded is saved to that temporarily, so multiple users can access that data. So if I download a Big Apple update and Ben plugs his computer in and downloads the same update, he's actually pulling the data from the cache flow server instead of from Apple.
Is it cache music files too?
I wish I had the network experience to tell you that, but Jim might be able to tell you a little more.
Delete that part.
I would say probably not, but I can't answer that. Our network guy, if you want me to put you in touch with him, I definitely can.
It was a joke.
Hey, some students take music seriously.
You find the device a distraction from a teacher's point of view. You're trying to gather the attention of even all these adults.
Good
can
question.
Be a little tough. I can't imagine. You know, is from the teacher's point of view, do they find it a distraction?
Some teachers are going to tell you absolutely they do. Some just say no iPhones in my classroom unless I say time to use iPhone. You know, it depends on how they control their class.
Okay.
And others, as long as you're not making noise, they don't care what you do. So it's just a matter of, you
personal
know,
preference.
The faculty member, yes. So we've heard a little bit of everything.
Okay. In one of the sessions where they're presenting, they had the students talk and the teachers talk.
Yeah, I missed that, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, the one of the teachers said that's been raised within the faculty. And, you know, his comment to that was, they've already got devices that text message, that check email, that, you know, do those types of things already. So, you know, they're dealing with that already. Giving them these iPhones isn't going to change, right? What's going to keep their attention is the content of the, you know, of the class itself.
Now you
see them doing this, you know something.
Yeah, but, you know, they're going to do that whether they get an iPhone or not.
Yeah, 97% of our students had cell phones before we started this.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's always an opportunity for distraction, yeah.
And what we've heard, you know, even from high school, is that just regular cell phones, kids can text under the desk without looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and in this
can't
generation,
text, look at it.
And in this generation, the ones that are the more distraction they have, the better they seem to be doing, because they're big multitaskers, and it keeps their attention going, keeps them alive instead of falling asleep in the middle of class. So there are some pros and cons to the whole situation. Well, let me ask one that we have written down. This is one for you, Ben.
Oh, good.
What percentage of 18-year-olds can pass a credit check?
So let me go a long way around to answer that question. You know what? I don't know. That's why you know, we want to make sure that we put a process in place that supports the service being established in the parent name as well. So that's why that's a key component of it, and that was a component of, you know, the ACU and the OC and the other programs, and why we wanted to make sure that the premier option supports that as well. So there are some that can, but it's most likely that they don't have the established credit history, you know, rather than anything else. So then the fail-safe there is to immediately go back through. Our preference is that we try to do it in the student name. If that doesn't work, they just start the bi-flow over with the parent's information. So that was hopefully that successfully didn't answer that question.
So what's the average cost of the deposit?
It really is all across the board. It's not something when a deposit, especially in Premier, we don't see any sort of detailed information about that consumer. Even in our retail stores, we don't. You know, but a deposit could theoretically run from approximately $150. I think the maximum is above $800 to $1,000, depending on, you know, the lack of a presence of credit history or an issue or something like that. So it can be quite substantial. Yeah.
Can we ask one of yours?
Yeah, the other real big one is support. I mean, obviously there's been some sort of increase to your support costs, and maybe you guys seem to be pretty technologically savvy, so you may be able to do more with less. But I don't know about anyone else, but having come from the support side of the house, was there an increase, and if so, how much?
You know, walk-up traffic, we talked about a 32% increase. But as most of y'all probably know, if you look at your call center stats, over the past several years, there's been a steady decline in the number of calls that you receive from this generation. They're more hands-on. They also like to look on the web, but they also want you to come to them. And so there has been some adjustment going that way, which has helped us deal with this from a walk-up perspective.
We did add one.
Yep.
To
you. Oh, okay.
At our Genius Bar,
mm-hmm.
We have a full-time person there to handle that, and they handle any kind of walk-up traffic.
Gotcha.
But because we were anticipating the walk-up traffic from the devices, phones, and the touches, we did add one FTE.
But does that, the one FTE is just a support area? What about a credit you look across the institution in order to support this initiative? What does it look like? I was just in South Florida, and they, just for the faculty side, they added a full FTE plus another two assistants in that office, just with a 30-person faculty. So,
the positions that we plan on adding, one, Dr. Rankin, that has been talking, was a full-time professor. Now he's full-time in this initiative. We plan on hiring one or two more developers in our programming area, and then we're going to hire one another network security person because of the increased density of the wireless network.
And adding the Genius Bar helped a lot, because you could have more than one person helping. I mean, I think that was our biggest win, because we could add a lot of people to it, but being able to organize the traffic flow really helped us.
And basically, that one FTE at the Genius Bar is the only position we added. These other positions we're just now talking about. So we did not, for the last year, that was the only position we added.
Did you add more to your wireless infrastructure?
Yes.
To support?
Yes, it was, we were planning to go wireless across the campus, but we made it denser.
John, be answering for
Oklahoma
question too. We don't
want to
do all this.
I guess from OC's perspective, we came at it from a little bit of a different
different angle, having already that one-to-one laptop program in place. We have done some significant studies with the one-to-one laptop program, and we actually showed that our support costs decreased once we switched and brought in that laptop program, simply because we didn't have to staff as many specialized and general labs around the campus. We haven't finished completing our studies for the changes that have come into effect since we introduced the mobile platform last year, but we haven't seen any significant change in the Delta. I mean, our support is always going up, but there hasn't been a significant change in the rate at which it is going up in the past 4 months.
Thanks.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I just walked in, so I apologize if they already asked this question. What stakeholders did you guys get involved? What departments within the university did you get involved to make this happen?
About everybody. We had marketing, we had admissions, legal, academics, yes, definitely faculty side of the house, marketing, yeah, student financial services, because we have to, if a student loses a phone or breaks a phone, there has to be a charge. We have to have permission to put anything in the student bill. Automatically charge things to accounts unless we've gone through. You know how that is.
Nope.
Gone through something. So we had our financial services there. So we had a representative from several areas, and we still do.
And we even had AT&T and Apple on our calls in those meetings. So, I mean, I think Ben was even on a couple, might have been on a couple of them, individuals from Apple and AT&T, from all different parts. So there were a lot of people in that room and on that conference call.
Yep.
I'm not sure if this is right. It was part of my question, but I'll ask it anyway. If you had to do it all over again, as far as rolling it out to the, first to the faculty, would you do it any different? And then the second part of that, is there any, you know, objectives as far as this year, as far as, part of that, I guess, that learning curve or getting faculty, embracing it and bringing it into the classroom? Is there anything as far as the end of the year or did you see going forward?
I'll answer that, and also it's all John Grant, so I think he probably doesn't. The faculty adoption has been problematic, as I said earlier. We're hoping to really require that they attend a class. I think we made the statement that we expected them to, but we might even expect them to go to the class before they get the device. We've also, I'm talking about the professors,
okay.
Faculty. We are forming a team right now. We've already started and made some appointments. We are having the faculty, if they would like to have someone come to their class when they use the device for the first time, a technician will come to their class, we'll make an appointment, we'll go to their class, and we'll help them use that device the first time. Now, we don't want to go every time they use it. Now, if they use it in a different way, we might come again, but if they're trying to do a survey or test or word clouds or whatever it is they're trying to do, and we've had some real positive response to that announcement. That seems to be one of the big issues, is that, you don't want to be in front of your class and look dumb and think you're going to do something cool and then you can't do it. And so that has had some positive response. We're hoping also, we have a freshman 100 class that all freshmen, a U100 is what it's called, all freshmen have to take. And we are trying to get in that class at least one time the first week of the fall so that we can do a demonstration. what can actually be done with these phones from an educational standpoint, and that way we'll be teaching the students and faculty. So we are, our vice president, our executive vice president has told us very sternly that he expects for us to get better faculty adoption, and so we're working on it. We really are putting a lot of effort into it right now. You know, you have your handful that love it and are so excited. Another thing, we're wanting that handful to teach some classes too. In Georgia's area, the Adams Center, they have luncheons and faculty members speak fairly often, almost every day they have something like that. And so we're encouraging this group to come in and teach about how they use the iPhones in their classes. So we're doing everything we can think of to improve that. John?
I'm going to answer that with a few different parts. The first one, is there anything we would change? Yes, probably everything. I think one of the problems with being on the bleeding edge is that you really do a lot of bleeding, and you find out the hard way what works and what doesn't. Faculty adoption, the best recommendation I have is find your champions. We really worked hard with our faculty to try and find those one or two people within each department that were already heavy Mac users, that already had a desire to learn that, that loved new technology. And those people have really helped us to get that adoption rate underway. It's one thing for IT to come in and say, hey, we have great new gadgets, use these, they're going to help you in your teaching. It's another thing for their peers to come in and say, these are really helping in the classroom, these are really getting the students engaged. And that, I think, is probably being our most successful effort, is getting those people behind it. And the more time that they spend with their peers, and the more that they do with the technology, then please stand up and take notice. And then they start to approach IT and say, hey, you know, we saw this professor doing this, we're really interested in that. Come and show us how, what we can do. So, find your champions.
Go ahead.
Kind of just following up on that, has there been much demand from the students on the teachers that are resisting?
Interesting.
I don't think so. I mean, the students will use them as social devices, and it's the cool that they will revert back to whatever they feel like they should use them as, instead of, you know, putting it on the faculty members to use them in class. They really leave it up to the faculty, in my opinion. Most of what I see is that they leave it up to the faculty to make the decisions on what they use in that classroom environment in terms of technology. But most of the students that interact with faculty that don't use technology like that will, you know, they'll use them as their cool web browsing and Facebook and Twitter applications and do all their cool stuff and kind of revert back to using a cool device.
So just then to follow up on that question then, based on your answer, how do you know that what you're doing is successful?
The people next door are talking.
So you're saying I'm in the wrong room.
I was thinking of that too. I was going to ask it in a slightly different way. As you guys were putting this program in place, did you set a minimum threshold for the percentage of faculty that you wanted? In other words, how did you define success? So we know that as we launch this, if we have 20% adoption, 30% adoption, etc., is that success for us in this first year? And are there targets to grow that, or and also how do you measure faculty use of this technology? How do you track that?
I would, you know, a little facetious, but I'm serious, that we did have our Dr. Scott Perkins, that's in charge of the faculty research area, they are dealing with that. I mean, they're the ones that are determining that, you know, what needs to be assessed from a university standpoint, as far as learning outcomes, as far as success, you know, how do we measure? It is a very serious issue that, you know, Kay mentioned, our executive VP, he's talked about, so what? You know, we spent all of this money and we put all of these devices out. If it didn't improve learning outcomes, and if we don't have a plan for that to happen, then we've wasted the money. And so he's putting a lot of pressure on the Adams Center, who leads our faculty development area, our faculty assessment, to come up with those measures. You know, how do we measure this, you know, on an ongoing basis?
Yeah, you might have just put a bunch of stuff out there so that these guys can access their Facebook easier.
Yeah, we may have just spent a lot of money and it didn't make any difference in learning outcomes.
Well, actually, I think that's a very valid question. You know, how do you know it's working? But also, I think, or at least it's my experience, at least from what I've seen the students, is that the expectations of the students are, when they are coming from high school into college, they're looking for tools that are available for them to learn, to have access to the different resources at any time, in any place. So even if it's just to access their Facebook, if that's gonna allow them to stay in contact with some of their classmates to talk about, yeah, what are we gonna do later tonight, but also, you know, what do you think about this specific topic we're covering in this class or something like mm-hmm. that. I think that adds value, and it's there's other people more qualified to measure that, but I think the students that are coming in now into college, their expectation is to have these type of devices or to have these type of tools that are gonna allow them to fit their lifestyle and therefore learn accordingly.
I think the difference is, you know, is the expectation that when they come to the university, that the university provides it for them mm-hmm. or provides access. We could have done the same mobile learning initiative and the same mobile applications without paying for a device and provided it for them. So I think that's the question, you know, is even though they, yes, we understand they have that expectation, but does that mean that we have to, you know, pay
right.
for the devices?
Yeah, yeah.
It is, but overall, it's still a pretty complicated cost-benefit analysis that needs to go on. And
yeah.
academic learning is like number one amongst everything, but there are other things too,
yeah.
right, that play out. But I'm left wondering, and I want to go back to something that the keynote speaker said last night, and I'm not sure it's right, but it might affect this issue directly. Are students today sufficiently different that this becomes an obligatory action on our part in order to get to them as better, in order to engage their learning styles? Or is that just a bunch of hot air? I mean, if we believe that it really is true, then we really, you know, that's one sort of answer. But if we don't, that's an interesting sort of deal.
And I think the best way to test that is to require them to use that to produce some kind of content or some kind of results, whether it's measuring how many responses they have on a discussion list, whether it's creating some kind of multimedia content. I think if you give them some opportunities to do that and to provide that back as a feedback or a result, an outcome from their class, that you'll find that they'll take the ball and run with it and be more creative. What I found in classes where I give students some kind of task that involves technology, you find that people develop a competition among themselves, at least law students do, and I think it's probably true
and
any group of students.
I think whether it's an iPhone, an iPod Touch, a BlackBerry, a laptop, it's enhanced the classroom environment.
Yeah.
This has given the students the opportunity, and I didn't get to show you all the stuff with AC Mobile, but it has, you know, how many events they have in terms of coursework that week, how many events they have on campus that week, things that are going on around campus, access to their files tab where they could see their course syllabus or where they could view documents that they've stored up there, since the iPhone doesn't really have something that I could just throw data on. You know, we're giving them that access through the web, and I believe it's truly enhanced the classroom environment. You know, and so you have to look at it both ways, not just how the faculty are dealing with it academically, but how it's giving the students the tools. And that from the support, you have to understand, we look very much from the support perspective instead of the faculty development side, but those tools are the things I see students use on a regular basis. They come to our desk, they're going, wow, now my calendar can keep me synced up in Google, and I've got all my email, and I can chat on my phone at the same time with all my friends, and I can stay connected. It's all the cool stuff that they would normally like to do anyways, but now it's put more in an academic environment, and it's enhanced that classroom environment for the students.
And it's a single point of reference for them class, I've got, you know, and so I think the ability just to, I mean, they have to deal with a flood of information, and putting that flood of information in one area where they can look, I think that alone is helpful. And whether or not that makes a successful academic student or if it makes a successful person, you know, is up for debate, but you know, I think you can't deny the even just the pure logistics point of view.
Well, and I think that adds an immediacy to a student's ability to gain and gather information in a faster way. So if you think how, and they were talking about how we learn with textbooks. So if you're doing research from textbooks and you want to search for a breadth of information, you have to go to the library, you have to search for these textbooks, and you have to hunt them out in a very manual fashion. That's very labor intensive and it's very, very time consuming. You know, so you take that to the next step, and now you give someone access to the internet, and now there's all this information available on the internet, and you can do that via computer, and you can search much more quickly and gain access to more information than you would have had only in your campus library. And now we take that to the current step, and we have access to that via mobile device, and we have social networking tools where now I can share information about myself, but I can also see information from all of my peer groups and the groups that I'm plugged in with. And so now that gives me an additional resource beyond the internet to leverage for information. And so I think we have evolved, and I think we have changed in the way we've learned because of the resources that are available to us. And I think it adds to the immediacy. I use turning technologies as an example. So a professor who's lecturing, you know, in the traditional method, and wants to see if their students read the textbook material from the night before, might give a quiz at the beginning of class, of course. And the students hand in that quiz, and then you go about your day, and you're going to lecture with the lecture that you plan to give, whatever. And you don't really know if the students had an understanding in the material that they were to read until you go back to your office and grade that, and then you come back at the next class or the next week or whenever it is, and you may have to go back and touch on things that were missed or recover some things that they didn't have a full level of understanding, and you've lost that week. Using the turning technologies and that immediacy, you can immediately gauge, does my class have an understanding of this material, and immediately tailor your lecture. So there's an immediate response and an increase in learning in a shorter period of time, which lets you include more material in the same class session. So. Yes, I think it absolutely changes, and it's about the access and the immediacy.
Reflective practitioner does that without clicker. I mean, you could sample your class on questions in a 3 minute or 30 second or whatever it is. Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I use that as an example. Certainly there are other ways to do that, but I like that immediate response, because then as a professor you can immediately tailor your lecture and what you accomplish in that class period, without, for lack of a better way to put this, wasting time having to do it at the next session. So.
Or sometimes I'll give, I do a lot of staff development in K-12, and it's funny, and one time I used it, it was like, this is a goofy example, but for polling, but instant. And I was like, we're in a group this size, where do you guys want to go to lunch, Italian or sushi? Nobody raised their hand, so I put up a quick poll, and then nobody felt obligated, you know, so it was kind of goofy. Another time I did a cyber bully workshop, and it was the same thing. You guys want to start with identity theft, cyber bullying, what do you want to start with? I don't know, so I put up a poll, and then you knew right away where to start. So even using it with faculty, you know, things like that, when nobody is an adult wants to answer.
One thing that we found was when we initiated our mobile learning platform in 2000, we expected to see a very clear enhancement of learning in the classroom directly through the use of the laptop. In 2003, we did a review of the program to see kind of what results we had with that. We brought in David Brown from Wake Forest University. And the results of what we found was it had enhanced what we had done, but not in the way we expected. Rather than a direct enhancement of in-classroom learning, what we had seen was a major improvement in communication, great increases in communication between students and faculty, and what that led to was more highly engaged students, and hence more engaged learning. And that's kind of that as the key focus of the program is to increase that collaboration within the classroom between students and faculty and between students and their peers.
But are you saying that there was more engaged learning but not more learning?
I'm saying that what we expected to see was a direct correlation between using the laptops in class.
Right.
But most of the learning came about not necessarily within the classroom.
Sure.
But within communication outside the classroom.
Okay. But taking the next logical step, did you see a change in learning?
I do not know the answer to that. I can get you a copy of the report.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
Yeah, that's no problem at all. If you know your meetings got out there, they'll be more than happy to have a report.
Other questions?
In the training, the professional development for your staff, other than the obvious new user navigation, what other required trainings are you looking at, or required support trainings are you looking at to help them get through it? What kind of topics?
Well, we'll have faculty training at showing the ways they actually use these devices. On the www.acu.edu/training, you can see our full schedule. Well, that's all technology training. So you can see everything we offer and descriptions of those courses.
Thank you.
Do you have a campus alert system that you use the devices to spread out to the students?
Well, we use E2 Campus, and so it's just using text messages. And I mean, it's a combination of text messages and email, but it's an opt-in process.
It was part of the videos that we put on the TUNY5 channel, and some of the ones that you saw an example of. We walked them through the steps on how to do it. So.
One thing I might add from a carrier's perspective, and I alluded to this a little bit in my segment as well. It's just important to keep in mind, and I think everyone's starting to understand that certainly the text messaging piece is a very important but only one component of an emergency notification system and that sort of thing. Regrettably, the text messaging networks, AT&T and all the carriers included, weren't built for mass notification like that was mission critical, must be received, that sort of thing. And so, if you have thousands of users on a campus that are to be receiving a broadcast message like that, and there's not some sort of gating in the delivery of those messages through some sort of an aggregator or something like that, you will have a clogging effect on the cellular network, and there will be delivery delays and issues with that. So. Certainly, it's our recommendation to make sure that that's a component and a very important one, but you're also sending email blasts and you're doing out-dialing or other things in addition to that, and you're not relying on the SMS piece. So,
I have a question. Can you give some examples of how you use the iPhones or the iTouch with the learning management system here at the university? I don't know. There's a lot of solutions. We're evaluating our university, our class capturing solution, and Integrity, and I think Gecko 360 provide, the captures for in a format that you can deliver through the iPod. What are some examples that you guys use your learning management system with the mobile devices?
No, we use Blackboard, and it's not integrated.
Okay.
But the only thing I will say is a caveat to that, that our mobile portal, m.acu.edu, has a courses tab that is associated to things that happen in your courses. So it's kind of our homegrown part of that. And then Blackboard is a piece of your courses tab, because not only does your course just include Blackboard, but it's your files tab, your iTunes U listing, your class roster. There's a lot of things built into that. The iPhone took as much as it could, but Blackboard's not necessarily a piece of that situation.
Did you guys develop that integration in-house, like so that you can bring all that into the phone?
Yeah, and with Web Firecracker, that was the company that we used that did the design.
Yeah,
the look and feel. But it was in-house by our web integration programming team.
have, do you use SDK apps that you distribute to your students and or faculty or staff? And so how do you deploy them?
The only applications that we use campus-wide are web-based. So it's easy to get access to them, m.acu.edu. I do know several faculty and staff that have developed applications using the SDK. And what they did was create, you know, go through Apple and distribute them as free applications through the iTunes store. And I know one professor that was working with his kids, and he got them to download the free application, just like we did with Turning in that particular case when y'all came to registration. The application was freely available through the Apple App Store, and they've deployed them that way. And I would assume that if we ever did develop an application, that'd probably be the process we take. But
do you know if Apple has the facility to have, like, you know, iTunes U, but for applications, where you can, you know, you can have only for your university, and maybe even, you know, only for a particular subset of your users, download this app or this app or this app?
Yes, we do.
Cool.
Centralized application management.
Yeah, it's the enterprise program, SDK Enterprise, and we can send information out on that if you'd like.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Let me ask a couple of other questions on here. Let's see, how many iPhones or touches have been broken and how many have been lost? Do you want me to answer ours? You want to answer ours.
Well, we know that about 30-some-odd have been lost, am I correct?
Lost, stolen, water damage, or cracked?
Yeah, have been something.
38 iPhones.
And about a dozen touches out of 600-some-odd phones and 300-some-odd touches. But those are the known, you know, there are definitely students out there that have lost their broken theirs that we're not aware of yet, since they can manage to get through at this point without them. You know, we have a few classes where they would require you to have one, but not very many, because the classes, any mixed classes that have upperclassmen, because right now only our freshmen have them. So it would be only a freshman-only class where they might be required to use those. So we know that some of the students are probably not wanting to let us know, you know, they lost theirs or broken theirs because they don't want to be charged for them. So we'll find it out, you know, at some point.
But if it was an iPhone, they're still doing the monthly fee for the device, right?
Yes, they're still paying their AT&T contract. Yes, that's
the
true.
Parents we hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we have parents. We don't know something. And John, how many of yours?
I don't know the numbers exactly. I work with the guy that handles all of our hardware. We share an office, and I see probably, I would say, one, maybe two a week come in that have either been dropped or broken in some manner. Our students, usually whenever we introduce something new, we kind of see a significant amount of breakage right at the start of it, and then people start to realize, wait, this costs money to get these fixed, and they start to take better care of them, and that's really helpful.
We do have a big concern when they're going to be gone this summer, because as with when they came back during Christmas, there was a big jump for those 2 weeks where we had lots of users come in more than usual, and so it's going to be really interesting to see how well these devices hold up over the summer when they're out actually in, you know, out in out in the ocean swimming with their phones. We're very worried about that, but it'll be a busy time of the year, so we're used to it being pretty crazy then.
Spring break would be interesting.
Oh, man. You never know.
Jim just reminded me of something I'd like to point out. When the 3G phones, the chargers were recalled, Apple has helped us tremendously on that. It made it very easy for us to send those back, and they replaced them very easily for both faculty and students. So that was one of those kind of things you couldn't predict, and Apple came through really well with that. Helped us very much. We've got some students that still don't care and haven't brought theirs back yet, but it's not Apple's fault. It's the kids' fault.
keep usage statistics on Wi-Fi access for all the devices? So, I mean, you could conceivably see when the last time someone used their device was on campus.
Brett, our wireless management system, I mean, our Bradford campus manager, which manages our registration, would be able to identify the last time an iPhone or a touch that's associated to a user has accessed the network, but that is not something that I know that we regularly pull down. It could be something that our network guys do, but it's not something
Our network guys actually monitor the network, and that's how we discovered that there were 1,700 iPhones on our network that we didn't realize.
Wow.
Yeah, we actually saw at UT from December to January, we saw an additional 4,000 devices on there.
That's when our pickup was as well.
Yeah.
Christmas.
So I know they're tracking that because they just talked about it in the meeting I was just in, so that is there.
I mean, we can identify how many are on. It's just not something that we spend a lot of time looking at.
Sure.
All right. Let's see. Where do students get a replacement when they lose or break their devices? You want to answer that one, Sean? I'm interested.
For us, I'm not sure how ACU does it. All the student does is come into the help desk. They treat it exactly the same as if they've got a software problem with it, as if they've got a problem with their laptop. They come into the help desk, and we can take care of it for them. We can give them a replacement on the spot. Obviously, if it's being dropped or, you know, they dropped in the toilet, as one of our students did, there's a charge associated with that. But we can have them in and out of there within 15 to 20 minutes with a brand new device.
How much is the charge?
It depends on exactly what is wrong with it, the degree of damage to the
structure.
At a maximum, I think the funds cap out at around about the $650. That's
$650.
We do keep a couple of stock. We have, I think, two stock iPhones, and we have around about a half dozen stock iPhones.
So does your university, like ACU, purchase the equipment, or do you all, or is it in their package, part of their tuition?
We're very similar to the hybrid that Ben spoke about earlier. We pay for the equipment up front, but the student is responsible for the AT&T contract if they go with the iPhone.
It's probably also worthy to note that the additional devices that you guys have to be able to give a student when they come out, and you guys as well, that's a result of your relationship with Apple and the authorized service provider program. Unfortunately, AT&T is not able to support allowing an inactive device again to be distributed. So, but as the service providers, they have the ability to have access to those.
Apple recommended to us approximately 2%. And we bought 2% more, and then when we send one in, they send one back. So we keep on hand always 2% extra unlocked.
Apple's been very good about getting us replacements. I can put in an order at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I will have brand new ones sitting on my desk at 9 or 10 o'clock the next morning.
Apple International, you take an Alvin shot.
I'll get on that.
Does he get to decide he gets shot? Yeah.
Does anybody have one more burning question?